Trapp and Sikorsky were crawling down a dried-out irrigation ditch that ran parallel to the border of a field about half a mile from the edge of Ali Daoud. The sun had set but had not yet completely disappeared below the horizon. There was just enough natural light to see by, but before long, they would be forced to use their night vision. Trapp held up his fist to signal a halt. He needed a drink break. He looked at Sikorsky.
You're awful quiet.
Makes a change, huh?
Sikorsky reached for a water canteen that was contained in a soft pouch clipped to his belt to prevent it from bouncing off something hard and giving away their location.
Makes me think I did something to piss you off.
Trapp lifted his own canteen to his lips.
You mean aside from volunteering me for a suicide mission behind enemy lines? Nah, I was just thinking that you were right.
Now that does make a change. It's about time you recognize my brilliance. About what, exactly?
Something stinks about this whole operation. Everything we know about this Jafari jabroni says he's the kind of man who doesn't make mistakes. I don't know about the dead guy with the tat, Tahari or whatever he was called, but do you think a guy like that would allow amateurs to work with him?
I do not.
I figured. So that has me wondering what we're all doing here.
Me too.
Well, I guess we're not going to get the answers we need just lying here. Let's go get eyes on this village. If something's hinky, I guess we're the only ones who can do a damn thing about it.
Let's hope we're just overthinking things.
Trapp sensed in his gut that they weren't. They continued to crawl until they reached the end of the field, where the irrigation ditch disappeared into a length of plastic pipe that was half blocked by stones and debris. They waited there until night fell in earnest to allow them to operate with a little more freedom.
Hangman, chopper, I'll copy.
Loud and clear.
Trapp's mind briefly filled with a picture of the man who had given Sikorsky that nickname. He was also a ranger, though not currently deployed to the sandbox. Lucky bastard.
We have eyes in the sky over your position. You're clear until the village.
Trapp signaled his understanding, then clipped his night vision goggles into place. He extended a closed fist toward Sikorsky, who bumped it in return.
Happy hunting.
Yeah, just so long as we don't end up as the prey.
Both men hoisted themselves out of the ditch and quickly crossed the small border at the edge of the field before stopping in the cover provided by the head-high stalks of Iraqi wheat. They each dropped to one knee and scanned in every direction to confirm the information relayed to them from the recon drone above. After 5 minutes of listening and watching, they glanced at each other and communicated with a silent thumbs up. They used the cover provided by the wheat to traverse almost the entire distance that separated them from the village, stopping every 50 yards or so to confirm that they remained undetected. The closer they got, the more frequently they stopped, and all the while, a stream of running updates from the operator of the drone above them buzzed in their ears. There was only one cardinal instruction for their night's work: to remain unseen, at least until Delta arrived and the shooting began. If it happened before then, the entire operation would be blown. Trapp's thoughts drifted in the darkness to Nadia's son. He wished he could have given the woman more hope, even as he knew that he never could. He couldn't stop himself from wondering whether the kid was in there, and if he was, how he was being treated. Surely Omar wasn't so far gone that he would mistreat his own son. But it was hardly the first time that Omar had beaten the kid. As they reached the end of the wheat, he held up a fist and sensed Sikorsky tuck in automatically beside him. There was a space of about 10 yards between the crop's ending and where the village began. In effect, an almost unbroken barrier of windowless mud walls that marked the rear of each dwelling. The settlement was electrified, though it seemed as though many buildings either didn't have access to the grid or their occupants simply couldn't afford to keep the lights running. Taking a knee, Trapp began to study the village to his left, searching for any signs of life. He took his time, knowing that Sikorsky was doing the same to their right. There were endless spaces in which a lookout could be hiding, invisible to the IR cameras in the sky. He glanced at his watch. The gently luminescent hands glowed through goggles that magnified their brightness hundreds of times. It read 1915 hours, leaving over 5 hours until the assault was scheduled to begin.
I don't see anything.
Me neither. No sentries. Nothing out of the ordinary at all.
What do you want to do?
Trapp pointed at the building about 5 yards to their left. It was a little shorter than many of the other dwellings, and there was an old piece of farm equipment pulled up against it, some kind of geriatric Iraqi tractor that had long since passed into the scrap heap in the sky.
Let's get up on top of that thing. It looks solid.
You got it.
They moved quickly. It helped that they were traveling light, wearing only essential armor and carrying just their weapons, communications gear, and a small amount of ammunition, and little else. When they arrived at the village's outer wall, they pressed themselves against it as they checked whether they had been spotted. Trap had to wait until the blood stopped rushing in his ears before he could listen. Slowly, the sounds of the night returned. Just a mile from here was the desert proper, mile after mile of endless, featureless sand. But over countless generations, the local villagers had tapped the River Alwand and used its bounty to create rich, productive agricultural land, which now meant that he heard crickets and the pattering of rodents, and not much else.
You hear that?
What?
I'm not sure.
And then he realized there was no sound of human life, no voices emanating from either televisions or radios or car engines or children laughing or their parents hushing them. He checked his watch again just to ensure that he hadn't misread the time. 1921 hours. Too early for everybody to be in bed.
It's too quiet.
Maybe there ain't much to do here after it gets dark. Not like they're big drinkers out here.
Yeah, maybe.
Trap reached out and tested the old tractor, pushing down hard until he was certain the rusted machine wouldn't squeal when he put his full weight on it. Sikorsky did the same, then grinned.
Just checking your work.
You go first. I'll cover.
Sikorsky nodded his understanding, then slung his rifle over his back and made sure that it was secure and wouldn't shift as he climbed. Trap gave him a thumbs up. Once he was on the tractor, the ranger was tall enough to reach the roof of the single-story building. He reached up with his right, then left hand and fastened each on the edge of the wall, moving slowly and carefully and making sure that his grip was solid before he continued. Trap left one eye on him, but most of the rest of his attention was occupied with making sure there were no threats to their rear. Next, Sikorsky lifted his right leg and nestled his boot into a slight crack in the wall. He made sure that his foothold was secure. There seemed little danger of dislodging a larger, louder chunk of debris from the solid structure. Finally, the lithe operator hoisted himself up and over the lip of the wall, driving with his right foot at the same time as he pulled upward with all the strength in his arms and back. He disappeared from Trap's sight, leaving only darkness where he'd just been.
Clear. I've got you.
Trap followed the route that Sikorsky had picked a moment before and joined his friend on the roof without breaking a sweat. He lay flat on his belly. The day's heat rose back off the surface and warmed his chest.
Man, this place is dead. Looks half abandoned.
If Ali Daoud had ever been a prosperous place, it certainly wasn't any longer. The building Trap and Sikorsky were lying on had once hosted a television antenna, but the device had long since rusted into obsolescence. The cable that had carried Saddam's propaganda broadcasts into the dwelling below was frayed and snapped. The roof provided enough of a vantage point to see about 30 yards of the road that Delta's Fox element was supposed to take before hitting the Red Buffalo compound, right up until the road kinked to the left and led to the building. Trap dropped his eye to his rifle's thermal scope. The street immediately lit up in grays and whites, outlining spots where the heat of the day was now radiating back out of the ground. An ancient-looking sedan, parked at about the midpoint of the street, was warmest of all and glowed brightly in the gloom. He swept the weapon to the right, but saw nothing else before the road hooked back around. Then he did the same to the left. He stopped as the sweep revealed something that had been invisible to the naked eye. A man was seated underneath the awning of what might have been a shop as far to the left as he could see, about 15 yards before the parked car. An object glowed in his right hand, and Trap watched as the man lifted it to his lips and took a drag from his cigarette.
At least someone's awake.
He gestured toward the target so that Sikorsky could take a look.
It's not such a bad life. I don't see a weapon.
Me neither.
Trap crawled to the edge of the roof, pausing right before he got there to ensure that his gear was tightly secured to his frame, then looked over. The building he was lying on was little more than a shell. There was no door, and it was entirely dark inside. He looked right and saw that the next five houses looked the same, all dark and as obviously abandoned as this one. It was the same to the left, perhaps seven empty buildings, then one or two out of which a little electric light leaked through shuttered windows and from underneath doors.
Sergeant Trapp, how copy?
Immediately recognizing Captain Myers' voice over the radio net, Trapp backed away from the edge of the roof.
I read you, Captain.
Give me a sit rep.
Sir, we just arrived in position. Target looks quiet. So far, no evidence of either armed insurgents or military-age males, but it seems like everybody's tucked up inside. If anyone's here at all...
Any sign of trouble?
Not so far. But something smells off about this, Captain. I'm not exactly sure what it is. This place gives me the willies.
You have anything more concrete than the willies?
No, sir.
Okay, stay put. Radio in if you see anything concerning.
Copy, sir. Permission to recon farther into the village?
Negative. Too risky. Hold tight where you are.
Sir,
I backed your play, Trap, and you got me the information I needed. Now, your work is done. Myers out.
Trap was frustrated to have been denied. With the recon drone operating somewhere over his head, it wasn't even as if he could interpret his orders creatively and go for a little look-see without being spotted.
I guess we better make ourselves comfortable.
Sikorsky looked equally disappointed.
It's 1930. We've got a long time to wait.
Eyeing his rifle scope once again, Trapp focused in on the man smoking at the far end of the street. He seemed completely relaxed, as though he did this every night.
You see that guy?
Sure. Same as he was before.
Right. You see anything weird about the building he's sitting in front of?
No, there's... Oh.
Yeah. No lights. That's weird, right?
Feels that way. But it doesn't really mean shit, does it? Maybe he's late on his bills.
Nope.
They were far enough from the edge of the flat roof that nobody would be able to spot them from the ground. Without night vision, it was unlikely anyone on a nearby roof would be able to, either. Trapp couldn't help but feel that there were forces at work here that he did not fully understand. Finding that first empty missile crate had led them to Omar's farm. Nadia had led them to Burnt Ridge, where the narrowly averted disaster had built an inexorable pressure on Captain Myers and Colonel Ruzier to get results and put an end to the missile threat, and quickly. And that had led Sikorsky and him to Ali Daoud. Soon, many more Americans would come to this place. It was as though they were all just pawns on a chessboard, and some unseen hand was slowly, methodically moving his pieces into position. But to what end?
Checkpoint Alpha.
The terse voice signaled that the Echo and Fox detachments had left the main highway. The two sniper teams had worked their way into position about half an hour earlier and had reported clear fields of fire on the target compound. Still nothing stirred in the village. Trapp began to believe he'd talked himself into an unwarranted state of anxiety. The operation would proceed smoothly after all. Delta would knock down a door, snatch a bad guy out of bed, and wrap a kid up in cotton wool, and it would all be over in minutes. The smoker had retreated inside for about an hour and was now back on his doorstep, steadily chaining his way through what had to be a second pack of cigarettes. Trapp guided his rifle scope back in the man's direction, fixing it in place and studying the subject intently for anything he'd missed.
Fox, checkpoint Bravo.
This signal meant that the two Delta detachments had separated where the road forked into two lanes to enter the village. Trapp's heart beat faster. This thing was happening whether he liked it or not. He glanced at Sikorsky.
You good?
Yeah.
Me neither.
Checkpoint Charlie.
Trapp could hear the vehicles now. They were moving fast, but not recklessly. Probably 40 kilometers an hour. About as quickly as the Austrian-manufactured armored vehicles could go in a built-up environment without risking an accident. The smoker didn't seem to care. Panning back, Trapp saw the smoker drop his present cigarette, lit only a few seconds earlier, and crush it underneath his boot before disappearing back inside his shop. Trapp's stomach knotted with tension, his gut screaming that something was wrong with this picture. But still, Myers' words echoed in his skull. He didn't have anything concrete, and interrupting the strike element now might be as dangerous as letting them proceed into an ambush. Speed was critical, and doubt was like friction, slowing everything it touched. The first of Fox's armored vehicles skidded around the corner and became visible at the edge of Trapp's vision. The grumble of its engine was unmistakable. It was traveling without lights, but the heat from the engine glowed through his scope. It ate up the yards rapidly and reached the sedan halfway up the street in the blink of an eye. The car detonated with sufficient force to throw both Trapp and Sikorsky physically back, almost to the far edge of the building's roof. Trapp's helmeted head smashed backward and bounced off the roof, rattling his brains as a flash of light burned his vision. His mind was clogged, but he knew he needed to act. Men's lives were at risk. He just didn't know what he was supposed to do. Finally, he grabbed his radio and brought it to his lips.
Ambush!
He could barely hear his own voice over the ringing in his ears and the pops of the secondary explosions in the street in front of him.
Echo! Bug the hell out! Now!
It was too late. A second brilliant yellow cloud of flame erupted 50 yards away on the other side of the village. Echo must have hit an identical IED. This trap had been meticulously prepared. Trapp dragged himself to the edge of the roof. A chunk had broken away from the front due to the force of the explosion, leaving a toothy gap. If anyone was on the radio net, he couldn't hear them. He could see the flames burning in front of him, but they did so silently. At least it seemed that way. He was seeing double. He shook his head to clear it, but the issue persisted. His chest ached from the force of the pressure wave, and his hearing rang incessantly. He squeezed his eyes shut, and as he did so, he felt something hard coming down on his back. He rolled over and stared up, reaching for his weapon as his brain signaled a threat, but saw Sikorsky instead. Trapp realized he was just warning him of his presence. His friend's features finally resolved at the same moment as the ringing died away and the sound of the world returned. Flames hissed on the street below, as well as something altogether more concerning, gunfire.
They're fucking everywhere!
Sikorsky pointed out at the village. Blood was trickling out of his left ear. Trapp stared up at him absently. His chest heaved, and his head slowly began to drop back as though it weighed 100 pounds. It would be so easy to fall asleep, to give in to what his body wanted. But he forced himself to resist. He could hear the gunshots now, and the occasional RPG detonating. He pushed himself up into a kneeling position and brought his rifle to his shoulder. The quiet little village of Ali Daoud had turned into a war zone. In the street below, the first of the two Pandur armored vehicles had rolled onto its side. Smoke poured out of the upper wheel well, and flames licked its scarred armor. It was instantly clear that this was the most intense battle he'd ever experienced, and it was only just getting warmed up. The second Pandur hadn't fared much better. It had escaped the worst of the damage inflicted by the detonation of the car bomb, only to hit a mine buried in the road. A crater was now gouged into the earth where it had been laid. Like the first, this Pandur wasn't going anywhere fast. There was worse news to come. At least a dozen insurgents had appeared from seemingly nowhere. Trapp now understood the meaning of all those darkened buildings and were raining small arms fire down onto the crippled vehicles. Sikorsky began calmly and methodically engaging targets.
Fox! Anybody alive in there?
Barely. But we're all still breathing. It's a mobility kill for sure, but these things are tough cookies.
Trapp caught a glimpse of an insurgent armed with an RPG popping up out of a trapdoor onto the roof on the opposite side of the street. Trapp brought his rifle up and closed his left eye. He dropped the target. Even as he did so, he watched as another pair of fighters maneuvered a machine gun into position and started pounding the smoking Pandur.
Fox, I suggest you remain in there for the time being. It's pretty fucking toasty out here.
While the crew of the second armored vehicle were radioing that they too were in one piece, the insurgents finally seemed to realize they had company. Rounds began impacting the roof upon which Trapp and Sikorsky lay, driving them back.
Fox, this is Gulf. We do not have a firing solution from our current location. Correcting now. We'll be out of the fight for at least 2 minutes.
Fox copies.
Disconcertingly, Trapp could hear the metallic clang of rounds impacting the Pandur's armor.
This thing will hold out against small arms fire till Judgment Day. But if those assholes are packing anything heavier, we'll be sitting ducks.
Trapp had worked that much out for himself. He and Sikorsky traded positions, laying down covering fire, one shooting as the other reloaded. But at the rate they were burning through their limited ammunition, traveling light no longer seemed like such a good idea. They wouldn't be able to keep up for long.
If we stay here, we're screwed, and so are they.
Concur!
Sikorsky jerked his chin at the machine gun position across the street.
You think we can take that out of action before we go?
Trapp checked his own ammunition supply. 3 mags left. It wasn't enough.
I got a better idea. Let's capture it.
I had a bad feeling you were gonna say that.
A storm of gunfire gouged chunks of debris out of the rooftop and kicked it up into Trapp's face. It was a miracle that neither of them had been hit. Clouds of dust and smoke from the ambush below made it difficult to see, let alone shoot accurately. The only blessing was that the same issue afflicted the men firing at them.
We need to move. You go first, I'll cover.
He fired another half dozen rounds, then indicated a building 2 units farther down the street. It had a lip on the edge of its roof that was about 1.5 feet tall, barely enough to shield them, but better than nothing. It would be easy enough to traverse the adjacent flat roofs to reach it, at least if people weren't shooting back. He unclipped a grenade from his plate carrier, wishing he'd been foresighted enough to pack more.
Frag out!
Sikorsky didn't wait a second after it detonated before he sprinted to the adjacent rooftop. Trapp fired 3 round bursts into the chaos to conserve his ammunition as he covered his friend. Sikorsky was panting from the effort of his brush with death. He huddled behind the meager shelter provided by the lip on the edge of the new roof.
I deserve a fucking long vacation. Somewhere real cold. I'm sick of this goddamn heat and the bullets. Especially the fucking bullets!
Yeah, and you probably shouldn't have joined the army.
Sikorsky wiped the sweat off his brow.
Wise guy, you ready?
As I'll ever be.
Sikorsky flashed him a thumbs up, crossed himself, and rose into the maelstrom. As soon as Sikorsky's gun began to crackle, Trapp made the same journey, sprinting as chips of mortar broke off the roof beneath him and tore at his fatigues. Bullets snapped unseen through the smoke, portents of death that would have pushed most rational minds into retreat. But with Fox's commandos pinned inside their armored vehicles, Echo taking heavy fire on the other side of the village, a crippling absence of air cover, and the Rangers on the river forced to fall back before they could push forward, Trapp, Sikorsky, and a few snipers were all that was left to hold the line. All this went through Trapp's mind as he threw himself to the ground next to Sikorsky. On the other side of the street, several of the insurgents seemed to have identified their new position and were laying down consistent, if haphazardly aimed, fire.
You made it!
By the skin of my teeth. You couldn't do something about those assholes?
Unfortunately, that comes with the gold package, and you only paid for the silver. Nothing I can do about it. It's policy.
I thought the customer was never wrong.
Sikorsky shrugged, though the strained expression on his face indicated that there were limits to even his famously light-hearted nature.
You haven't paid yet.
Trapp's earpiece crackled.
Fox, this is Golf. We are in position, holding fire until we hear from you.
Finally, some good news.
How much ammunition you got?
2 mags, maybe 6 more rounds in the rifle, and a couple of mags for the Glock. But if it gets that desperate, we'll...
We may as well throw the damn things at the bastards.
Something like that.
I'm about the same.
Trapp pushed the radio transmit button.
Golf, this is Hangman. Do you have eyes on the street?
We wouldn't be much use if we didn't, Hangman.
How many tangos are we looking at?
Maybe 12. That's not a comprehensive count. I see at least 6 on the rooftops, 2 manning that machine gun nest, the rest mostly equipped with small arms.
An explosion in the street below prompted a fresh radio transmission from Fox.
And RPGs. That one near enough scrambled my brain. Maybe you guys can leave the catch up till later?
Golf continued as though he hadn't even noticed the interruption.
And the rest are inside the buildings on either side of the street. Looks like they hollowed out the interior walls. Smart.
Okay. You think you can pin down the guys on the roof on my mark? We're running out of ammo here, but if we reach that MG nest, we should be able to mop up the fighters inside the building and get some more of our guys into the fight.
You got it.
Sikorsky reached over and tapped Trapp's shoulder, then pointed to the next roof over.
You see it?
Trapp squinted as he tried to make out what his friend was referring to. A fresh cloud of smoke poured out of the street below, momentarily obscuring his sight. It was only when it cleared that he finally saw it, a trapdoor leading into the building below.
Oh, that's definitely going to be locked from the inside.
Well, since between us you're definitely the strongest, I volunteer you to try and break through.
You've changed your tune. Cover me?
Figure it's the least I could do.
Can we get in? Head straight for the ground floor.
Trap was taking it as given that he would make it through the door and not die in the attempt.
We don't know for sure how many tangos there are down there. If we get into a fight with them, all we'll do is let them know we're here.
Yeah, you got it. Let's just cross the roof of death, drop in on a bunch of amped up Iraqi insurgents without them catching on, then cross a street that's being fired on from both sides without anybody noticing. Again!
You got a grenade?
One left.
Sikorsky unclipped it and handed it over.
Don't use it all at once.
I make no promises.
Trap hefted the explosive in his right hand. Closing one eye, he measured the distance to the trapdoor.
You're not thinking what I think you're thinking, are you?
Thankfully, Sikorsky, I'm not in that filthy head of yours.
He switched to his radio.
Golf, pin him down, would you?
After that, Trap blocked the world out. He guessed it was about 10 yards to the trapdoor, which was a recessed square not much wider than the span of his shoulders in both directions. Except for a few chunks of debris, the roof was entirely flat. He took a steadying breath and pulled the pin.
Frag out!
He tossed the grenade in a flat arc. It bounced off the opposite roof, then skittered along its surface before falling into the hole that housed the trapdoor.
Sorry, I doubted you.
A fresh sound of gunfire entered the fray. Gulf had started mopping up the insurgents on top of the buildings on the opposite side of the street. The volume of incoming suppressing fire dropped immediately.
Let's go.
Trap sprinted toward the next roof over without waiting for acknowledgement. The grenade had damaged the entrance into the building below without completely destroying it. He reversed his rifle in his hands and smashed its stock down repeatedly in clean, powerful blows, sweeping the remnants of the wood away. When he was finished, Sikorsky lowered the barrel of his rifle into the room below and pumped rounds into the darkness.
I'll take point.
He dropped his legs through the hole and lowered himself inside. He held on for a second before falling gracefully to the floor.
You coming, partner?
The room was pitch black, though Sikorsky had already clicked on the IR flashlight on the barrel of his rifle. Trap did the same. As far as either of them could tell, there were no insurgents inside this particular building. They made it downstairs without encountering trouble. As Gulf had intimated, holes had been created between individual homes along the street. They were easily wide enough to allow a man to pass through, even loaded down with weapons. It would have taken hours to penetrate and widen the gaps in each thick wall, and he noticed no tools more sophisticated than a sledgehammer.
They must have planned this for weeks, maybe longer.
No kidding.
I figure most of the bad guys will be upstairs. Easier to cover the ambush site that way. Let's turn their rat run against them. We need to get as far down the street as possible so we don't cross in the middle of a gunfight.
Sikorsky nodded. He crouched by the hole in the wall and looked through, using his rifle's IR beam to provide illumination.
Clear!
They scrambled through half a dozen buildings like ghosts.
That's far enough.
Trap's heart pounded from the effort.
You ready?
Sikorsky nodded. Trap used his radio.
Golf, this is Hangman. Request suppressing fire. We're about to make our dash.
Copy, Hangman. On your mark.
Mark.
Trap sprinted across the devastated street in a matter of seconds, with Sikorsky close behind. Without Gulf providing suppressing fire, it would have been a trivial matter for the insurgents dug into reinforced fighting positions to chew them up. As it was, the sniper and spotter team bought valuable breathing space. Trap snapped a mental picture of the battlefield as he ran. The true patches of both the upright and the crippled Pandur fighting vehicles were angled slightly away from the side of the street on which he'd just arrived. This left them fully exposed to incoming fire from the other side. But if he and Sikorsky could only make it to the machine gun, they would be able to put down sufficient fire for the Delta Commandos to free themselves and join the fight without being wiped out.
You okay?
Never better.
Trap pressed himself against the wall. He mopped thick, dusty rivulets of sweat from his forehead, wincing as the salty, filthy liquid stung his eyes. They were now about 30 yards farther up the street from the building they'd scaled at the start of all this. It seemed the insurgents hadn't yet cottoned on to what they were up to.
Ready?
Yep.
Trap led, keeping his frame pressed up tight against the wall to his left. The first room he entered was a kitchen of sorts. The place had been packed up neatly, reinforcing Trapp's suspicion that this ambush had been a long time coming. It had happened long enough ago for the insurgents to pry a hole through the wall here, too.
Clear. From here on out, we go dark, okay?
Sikorsky nodded his understanding.
Hangman, this is Golf. That machine gun nest has us pinned. They're switching fire between us and the fighting vehicles. We won't be much use to you from here on out.
Understood. Working on it.
As Sikorsky had done across the street, Trapp crouched and used his IR flashlight to check the room on the other side. It was clear. By this time, they would have to fight their way up. That was a whole different ballgame. Trapp crawled through, taking a knee to cover the room until Sikorsky joined him. They repeated the maneuver several times, entering empty houses. But the farther they crawled, the louder the noise of battle grew.
Here.
Trapp pointed at a brick stairwell in the corner of the room. He judged the machine gun was situated on top of this building or on one to either side. It was difficult to be certain. One thing was for sure, though. There were men upstairs, armed men. Again, Sikorsky signaled his readiness. Both men switched out their half-spent magazines for fresh ones, storing the ones they'd ejected just in case. Trapp crept toward the stairwell, keeping his frame low. He hoped that the fighters upstairs would be so consumed by adrenaline and the fury of battle that he and Sikorsky would be able to sneak up on them. There was nothing honorable about shooting a man in the back, but it was a hell of a lot safer than waiting until he turned around and shot you in the face. Footsteps thundered down the stairs. A white glow exploded in Trapp's night vision. As a man rounded the corner down the stairs, both Trapp and Sikorsky squeezed their triggers in unison. The insurgent dropped dead. A flashlight falling from his left hand and tumbling down the stairs, an AK-type rifle from his right.
Fuck!
The element of surprise was gone. But they still had a job to do. Trapp advanced, stomping down hard on the flashlight and hearing a satisfying crunch as the cheap plastic casing shattered underneath his heavy boot. Once again, the space was flooded with darkness, through which only he and Sikorsky could see. Their night vision was effectively a superpower. Ordinarily, it made firefights against opponents who were not similarly equipped akin to shooting fish in a barrel. Tonight, given the enemy's overwhelming numerical superiority, it just evened up the odds. He bent and picked up the Kalashnikov from beside the dead insurgent's hand, draping the strap over his left shoulder. The way his ammo supplies were going, he might need it sooner than he'd like.
Lead it.
He advanced up the stairs. They kinked to the left at exactly the point the Iraqi had appeared from. Trapp pivoted the same way as he reached the large square step at the center of the stairwell. Muzzle flashes lit up the room above in staccato cracks of sound and light. There was more than one shooter. Trapp didn't stop to count. He surged up the stairwell, entering the room and dropping the first of three insurgents in the same movement. The other two reacted quicker than their unlucky associate, diving for cover behind a haphazard assortment of furniture.
Covering!
Sikorsky was seemingly reading Trapp's mind. The Ranger depressed his trigger, firing clipped bursts with barely a second between them to fix both insurgents in position. Trapp moved before Sikorsky's weapon ran dry, vaulting over the couch in the center of the room and squeezing his trigger as he came down on the other side. He killed one of the insurgents at point-blank range, delivering a brutal kick to the midriff of the other. The man collapsed, dropping his weapon in the process. Trapp drew his own rifle back, ready to fire, but caught himself. He kicked the unlucky Iraqi a second time, ensuring he was down for the count. He dropped to one knee and bound the man's wrists behind his back with a pair of flex cuffs from a pouch on his plate carrier. They were a standard, essential part of his loadout.
I didn't know I was shipping out with Jackie Chan.
There's a lot you don't know about me.
Trapp kicked the weapons away from the dead men on the floor out of habit, grabbing a couple of spare magazines for his borrowed rifle as he did so. Sikorsky checked the rat hole to the building on the left as Trapp did the same on the right.
Clear! I don't see any fighters for a couple of buildings.
Sikorsky crouched to rustle through a couple of boxes of weapons and ammunition the dead insurgents had left behind.
They probably have no idea what just went down, not with all this noise.
Same here.
Trapp looked up for a way onto the roof.
Can we get up there?
I don't see any grenades.
And let's hope no one's waiting for us up there.
Trapp cased the route to the roof.
I'll take point.
Sikorsky moved toward the ladder Trapp had just spotted. He let his rifle fall against the single-point sling on his plate carrier and drew the pistol holstered on his thigh rig. He experimentally placed a boot on the ladder's first rung, and once satisfied the aged wood wasn't going to snap, he began to climb. He led with the pistol before poking his head into the night sky with an abundance of caution, moving inch by inch as Trap made sure that nobody was on his blind side. There were calls on the radio from Fox and Echo, who had finally made it out of their armored vehicles, but they had come under fire and some of their men had sustained injuries. Despite their injured men, they were fighting a professional rearguard action. Sikorsky beckoned Trap up, placing two fingers over his lips and motioning for silence. Trap nodded and began to climb. Once his head was free of the opening onto the roof, he passed the AK through and quietly set it down so that it didn't clatter against anything as he hauled his bulk the rest of the way. As he emerged onto the roof, the heavy thump of the machine gun became audible. It was resting on a tripod and firing northeast down the street, tracer rounds reaching out and bouncing off the tallest of the squat, featureless dwellings inside. Its target had to be where the Delta snipers had set up.
Any time now would be great.
The two gunners operating the weapon were completely engrossed in their task, probably half deafened from the continuous firing from the heavy gun, whose muzzle flashes lit up the night sky. The surface of the roof was covered in brass shell casings, with barely an inch of dried mud still visible. Trap and Sikorsky communicated using hand signals, identifying a target each. Both men aimed, then fired. The heavy gun fell silent. The fight was far from over. Trap took no satisfaction at the death of other men, but when they were shooting at his friends, he had no other choice. He scrambled to the machine gun, lifting the muzzle over the edge before aiming down.
Fox, this is Hangman. You get to skip detention in about 10 seconds. Get ready.
Beneath him, muzzle flashes spat fire into the night from both sides of the street. It was difficult to pick out who was who in the chaos, but Trap carefully picked out a nest of the enemy and squeezed the machine gun's trigger. In a matter of seconds, bullet holes pockmarked the street's facade, punching through the mud walls and making the already scarred surface resemble the face of the moon. The gunfire from that side of the street diminished instantly as the militants dived for cover.
We're ready, Hangman. We'll move on your command.
Trap kept shooting, squeezing the trigger as he moved his aim across each of the one-story buildings on the opposite side of the street in turn. By the time the ammo belt ran dry, there was nobody left to shoot. He sank backward as a wave of sudden exhaustion washed over him. Sikorsky took up the radio duties.
Fox, you're clear to exit. Still a few tangos on our side of the street. You mind mopping them up for us?
Our pleasure.
In 30 seconds, it was over. Sikorsky reached over with a clenched fist and bumped it against Trap's shoulder.
That was a hell of a close shave. Could have been a whole lot of us going back home wrapped in flags.
Trap simply nodded mutely. With the adrenaline fading from his system, he could barely muster the energy to think, let alone speak. A new voice burst onto the radio net.
Fox, this is Echo. We got a real bad problem here. Lewis is KIA and Breyer's gone.
What do you mean, gone?
Missing. Lewis took a bullet in the face, and as we were trying to save him, a whole phalanx of tangos converged on us. They knew what they were doing. It was like they had the whole thing planned.
Moving to your position now, Echo.
Sikorsky looked at Trap. For once, too stunned to speak, a wave of nausea rose from Trap's gut as the last few pieces of the puzzle finally fell into place. This had never just been about an ambush or killing a few American grunts to add to the body count read out on the nightly news. Hossein Jafari had wanted this all along. He had planned every step meticulously, made sure it was Task Force Center who came after him, then took away their key advantage, air mobility. He tempted them into a trap, then closed its jaws the second they were inside. But to what end? There were checkpoints on every road out of the village. A drone was circling in the sky overhead. Even if they had Breyer, they couldn't get him out. Trap's eyes went wide as he figured it out.
Oh, shit.
A punishing sequence of detonations echoed from the opposite side of Ali Daoud, and shortly after, the tempo of radio messages from the beleaguered Delta commandos increased noticeably. Just judging by the sound of the battle, Trap figured that the insurgents had concentrated most of their forces at Echo's ambush site, leaving a smaller detachment in his present location as a delaying force.
What is it?
I think I know how they plan to get out.
Trap knelt down to scoop up a fresh mag for his borrowed AK.
Grab as much ammo as you can. This'll get messy.
Would you care to share your deductions, Sherlock? Because there's a whole lot of us here who'd like to know.
I'm not certain. It's a long shot, but I don't see any other way for them to get Briar out of the village. You with me?
To the grave? But hopefully not that far. What are you thinking?
Whoever planned this, Jafari, whoever, they've been a step ahead of us this whole time.
No kidding.
Sikorsky was squatting on his haunches and staring out at the battlefield that had consumed the quiet village of Ali Daoud. The glow of flame colored the clouds in the night sky a dull ochre, and every few seconds the detonation of an RPG rocked the settlement, punctuating the incessant but more muted rattle of gunfire.
He wanted us to come here in the first place. Let's assume his ultimate goal was to kill as many of us as possible, and ideally capture one if an opportunity presented itself. Then he needed an exfil route. But a guy that smart would have known we would have had the roads blocked off, as well as a security screen a mile or so out.
Then what? You think he's got a helicopter on the way?
Sikorsky's face lit up as he found a fresh grenade.
Doubtful. We might not be able to bring any of our own choppers in, but an F-16 out of Anaconda could be here in 20 minutes. No point going to all that effort just to get blown out of the sky.
We might not shoot it down if Briar was inside.
I think he planned something better.
Sikorsky simply raised an eyebrow.
The river.
Our guys have it interdicted.
Sikorsky echoed Trap's refrain from a little earlier as he worked out that the Ranger boats had been forced to pull back.
Oh, crap.
My thoughts exactly.
Echo, this is Fox. We've mopped up here, moving to your position to assist. Fox out.
Do we go with them?
No. You and I head for the river. I might be way off.
Sikorsky made for the access hatch on the building's roof, but Trap shook his head. He gestured at the expanse of flat roofs that ran in an almost direct line to the river.
There's a quicker way.
The two men pounded the hard roofs. The AK slung over Trap's left shoulder kept bouncing against his hip bone, hard enough that he suspected the skin would be bruised black and blue in the morning.
Command, this is Hangman. Do you have eyes on the river? Maybe a possible exfil route for the hostage.
Vectoring now, Hangman.
Trap couldn't hear the sound of the Predator's engines over the din of battle, but it was impossible to miss the dual streaks of light, flame, and smoke that exploded from opposite sides of the village. There were missiles here after all. For a moment, both he and Sikorsky halted their headlong sprint and stared helplessly up into the sky. The surface to where missiles rose on columns of light and smoke as their bright engines rocketed upward. There was a delay of about 4 seconds. Then, a display, as impressive as any New Year's fireworks, erupted above them.
Damn!
All units, be advised we no longer have ISR coverage overhead. We're working on it.
No shit.
Sikorsky's chin dropped as he watched the drone's flaming debris tumble toward the ground, laced with rivulets of trailing smoke. Smaller detonations cooked off in the sky above as pockets of fuel in tanks and other components exploded, causing smaller pieces of detritus to spark off like flares in the night.
Guess it's just us.
Command, this is Hangman. Moving to get eyes on the river now. Over.
Understood, Hangman. Be advised, we cannot spare any additional units at this time.
Did Bravo leave anyone guarding the boats?
Negative, Hangman. All Ranger units are inbound on foot.
Trap rearranged the rifle on his left shoulder and began to jog once more. He vaulted a gap between two structures and started building up speed. He was transmitting as he ran.
Get at least one squad back to the boats. If that's how they are planning on getting Briar out, then we need to be able to follow them.
Concur, Hangman. Working on it.
A new stream of commands was issued over the radio net. Trap and Sikorsky blocked out the noise. The good news was that nobody was shooting at them. The bad news was that they'd just reached the end of the road, or at least the end of the roof.
Oh, man. This is going to hurt.
Sikorsky was eyeing the jump from the top of the building they were presently standing on into the walled compound below. There was a small brick outhouse about 3 feet away from the building's outer wall. It was only about 5 feet high, which meant a drop of at least 12 feet. Trap took a step back, focusing on the roof of the outhouse and visualizing the jump in his mind. He drew his right hand back, palm flat as a blade, and pictured it punching forward as he threw his bulk into the air. Trap's stomach lurched from underneath him. The fall seemed to last a lot longer than just a couple of seconds. He hit the top of the outhouse at the exact spot he'd planned, sucked his knees to his chest, and rolled just like the airborne instructors had taught him at Bragg. His aim was spectacular. It was everything after it that went wrong. Trap's momentum pulled him over the edge.
Crap.
He fell the last 5 feet to the ground, landing heavily on his back. He stared up at the sky, sucking air into his winded lungs, and watched as Sikorsky jumped considerably more nimbly, then slithered to the ground beside him.
That was rough!
Trap accepted his friend's proffered forearm and hauled himself back upright. The wall around the home's backyard was only about shoulder high, at least for Trap. Sikorsky had to raise himself on his tiptoes as the two men surveyed the scene before them. In front was a narrow lane, on the other side of which was another row of houses that backed onto the river. A narrow, trash-filled alley ran between two of the houses, presumably leading right to the water.
Give me a lift.
Trap dropped to one knee, boosted his friend to the top, and then pulled on his forearm once more in order to climb up himself. They dropped quietly onto the road and brought their weapons back up. Trap swept the street to his left as Sikorsky did the same on the right. The street was littered with garbage, mostly sheet plastic and discarded drink containers. Moving without dislodging any of it, and thus betraying their position, was painstaking and exhausting work. They converged on either side of the alleyway that led to the river. Trap wished he had a way of knowing whether and where the insurgents had prepared fighting positions to cover their escape. He tapped his chest, flashed a two-finger gesture down the alley, and waited for Sikorsky to signal his agreement. No enemy general could have designed a better spot for an ambush. The walls of the buildings on either side of the alley weren't built straight, but rather angled slightly outward the higher they rose, making it feel more like a tunnel than a path. The thick walls seemed to muffle the sound of the vicious fight still raging in the village behind them. He flashed the IR beam on the end of his rifle downward to reveal the trash blocking his route. He picked his way through step by step, the adrenaline pumping in his veins, urging him to go faster, and years of training pulling on the reins to make sure he didn't. Still no sign of the enemy, but there was the sound of hushed voices on the other end. Trap was 2 feet away from the end. The voices were louder now and more distinct, though he didn't understand a damn word of what the voices said.
Damn it.
It was Muniz.
Our boats are no good. Someone slashed them.
It was all the proof the Trap needed. The insurgents had Briar, and they also had a way of getting him out of the village. They would only need to move him a few miles downriver, just far enough to punch through the U.S. military cordon around the settlement. Without any way of chasing them or aerial surveillance to follow them from above, Briar might never be seen again. Trap reached the end of the passage. He stopped a few inches inside the alleyway and slowed his breathing. They were launching a boat, maybe two. He crept forward until his goggles jutted out of the alleyway. There were over half a dozen men out there maneuvering a pair of Zodiac-style rib boats into the water. Each boat had a powerful-looking outboard motor at the back. Three of the men crouched facing outward in Trap's direction and held their weapons ready to fire. And on the ground at their feet was the dark outline of a man. He was as still as the dead, though Trap hoped fervently that wasn't the case. Since his wrists and ankles were bound, it seemed unlikely. But with a friendly in the firing line, Trap couldn't risk starting a gunfight for fear of the consequences. This tactical situation was going from bad to worse. Sikorsky transmitted a sitrep.
We've located Briar. They're taking him out by the boat. We need assistance immediately. Over.
This is Echo. We're pinned down here and taking heavy casualties. We cannot move from our location at this time.
I can send half my guys your way, but that's all. We've been engaged en route to Echo's position. It'll take a couple of minutes.
I don't think we have that long.
Trap turned around and gestured for his fellow ranger to join him. They conferred in low, barely audible tones.
I guess it's up to us. They just loaded him into the first of two boats, and four of them look like they're climbing in, all armed. That leaves three hanging around the second boat, maybe a delaying force. But this is the only shot I think we're gonna get.
You want us to chase them on our own?
Don't see how we have any other choice.
Sure, why the hell not?